Go through what we covered yesterday in chapter 9. Krishna began by describing how chapter 9 was going to explain how devotional service is superior, ananya bhakti is superior to any other method of leaving this world and attaining the Supreme. So first Krishna, in the first section of 9, describes that Arjuna should hear from him. And one should hear, and one can hear if one is faithful and one is non-envious. Now, what is that that Krishna explains to Arjuna when he tells that he's going to hear from him? Krishna describes his Aishwarya, his opulence, or one of his foremost opulences, which is his achintya shakti, his relationship with the material world, by which he's controlling everything and everything is depending on him, yet he's completely aloof and everything is independent from him, working independently. And there's freedom. Then, understanding that, one should worship Krishna. And so in section C, it is described that fools don't worship Krishna and think that his form is somehow material, or that he's assumed this form. It's a product of tapasya, or under the modes of material nature. And those who are wise, actually divine, mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritim ashrita. Those who are divine or mahatmas, they take shelter of the internal energy and they worship him. And Krishna explains how they worship him. Now, in addition to those who don't worship him, those fools, and those who do worship him, there are those who do worship him, but they worship him indirectly and unconsciously, practically. And those were described as three. There's Ekam Sena, and those were described earlier, those who think themselves one with the Lord, and those who describe avajananti mam mudha, they are fools. Then there's Pritak Vena, the worshippers of the demigods who practically concoct that a demigod who is not supreme, they worship him as if he was supreme. And those who worship the universal form or worship matter. Those two, those who worship the universal form and worshiping matter, because Krishna is Adibhuta, or the presiding deity over the material world, they're actually worshipping Krishna, but they're unconscious of that. And the demigod worshippers are actually worshipping Krishna because it's Krishna who is supplying the fruits that the demigods give. So they're worshipping Krishna, but they're worshipping him avidipurvakam, improperly. So in section D, Krishna describes these two worshippers of Krishna who are worshipping improperly and without the proper knowledge. And he describes how to worship Krishna properly in the universal form, seeing it's Krishna who is the essence. And then he describes how the worshippers of the demigods who aren't worshipping him properly, they're actually, the only result of their worship is birth and death repeatedly. So it's not very attractive. Then Krishna describes in the final section of this chapter the glories of worshipping him directly, in knowledge, with full consciousness of him. So Krishna first begins by describing the simplicity of worship of Krishna and how super excellent the results are, because Krishna only asks for a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water. And not only that, Krishna shows favoritism to his devotees. For everyone else, he acts as the Paramatma, Samoham Samabhuteshu Name Dvesho Stina Priya, that he acts equally and reciprocates through the material energy with everyone, but for his devotee, because they are in him, and he always is in them. So he doesn't act equally with them, he shows favoritism to them. And then he explains Apichet Sudracharo. Even if they commit the most abominable activities, they are still to be considered saintly. Why? Because Chipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Because they will be very quickly rectified. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, explains in the purport to 30 to Apikshet Sudracharo, he explains Arjuna says, when he is worshipping, when someone is worshipping, he is a sadhu. Okay, Arjuna is saying, I accept that. He's a sadhu when he's worshipping. But if he's doing nonsense and trying to enjoy nonsense, then he is a sadhu. He is not a sadhu. And Krishna says, no. In every regard, he's a sadhu because he's properly resolved to serve me. He is thinking, I'm unable to give up this sinful activity and I'll go to hell. But I'll never give up devotional service to Krishna. Because of this determination, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, Krishna keeps him as a sadhu. He accepts him as a sadhu. Of course, Prabhupada explains in the purport that we should not take advantage of this and and commit sins thinking I'm a sadhu, I'm a devotee, and therefore I can do whatever I want and Krishna will accept me. No. That is namno baladyasya hi papabuddhi navidyate tasya yamari shuddhi. The seventh offense to the holy name. Navidyate tasya yamari shuddhi means that even if one has that mentality, even he goes to the court of Yamaraj and becomes punished, he cannot be purified if he has that mentality. So we should avoid that mentality, yet accept what Krishna says. And why? Because such a person, because of his determination, chipram bhavati dharma, he quickly becomes dharmatma, or righteous. And Krishna says, he quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. And because Krishna is sometimes known to break his promise, he asks his devotee to declare it boldly, because Krishna always keeps the word of his devotee. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this connection, listen carefully, for it is wonderful. Such an irreligious man who's rendering service, how do you accept his service? His heart is polluted by lust, anger, greed, and his offerings are all polluted by these things. Krishna's answer. Very quickly he becomes dharmatma, righteous, and I accept him. Krishna has not used future tense. He will very quickly become dharmatma. Quickly, because he laments, remembering Krishna, remembering me again and again. And because of lamentation, his heart burns. He thinks, alas, alas, there is no other devotee like me. I'm a black spot for devotees. And again he curses himself. Shashvat means again and again. Shanti. And thus he becomes purified due to condemning himself. Or you can take it in this way. Such a person, even when durachar, what does durachar mean?
It's a low class.
His achar, his activities are improper or bad or low. So the righteousness, even when he's performing durachara, his righteousness existed in him in a subtle form. He's taking the medicine of devotion, although the fever remains. He doesn't fear. He knows the fever, improper activities will go away, and the fever will go by the power of the medicine of or devotional service. The improper activities are like snakes with the fangs removed, and he obtains eternal peace. For his lust will go, etc., will go away and never return. Arjuna says, I understand that you are saying become dharmatma. There is no dispute, but if he remains durachari, does abominable activities, during his life, should we still consider him a sadhu? Krishna becomes angry. His eyes become enlarged. He says, Kaunteya pratijanihi, my devotee never perishes. Even if he dies, he doesn't go down. Now, when Krishna said like this to Arjuna, Arjuna put his hand on his head and said in great worry, many people will not agree. And he became morose. How can I help them to understand? Krishna says, take mridangas, take kartals, take drums, and bang everything loudly, and go where they are speaking like this, and raise both hands in the air, and take a vow, take an oath in my name, and say like this, the devotee, the Lord's devotee, even if improperly behaving, will never perish. What will happen? And when you speak like this, all the people will fall at your feet and say, Maharaj, you are my guru. But why is Krishna himself not taking this oath? Later in the 18th chapter, he himself takes the vow. Why doesn't he himself take it here? The Lord, before speaking, thought for a moment, I like my devotees very much, and I can't tolerate problems put upon them. I always protect my devotees, and on this battlefield, I'll have to break my own vow when Arjuna is fighting with Bhima. People will say, people will only know this Bhagavad Gita after the battle, and people will say, oh, he's spoken so many words, but he broke them. But they'll know Arjuna's words are like lines on a stone. Krishna therefore thought, Arjuna, not me, should make this vow. Some people say durachar means not improper behavior, but just attachment to wife and family. But such interpretations shouldn't be accepted. So says Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura. So this is why the devotees should surrender to Krishna. Because Krishna is so kind and merciful to his devotees in so many ways. Because he's a personal God. And he personally takes interest in his devotees. So not only he tells Arjuna to declare it boldly that his devotees will never perish. And so it's not only those who are lax are purified. Lax meaning those who have performed not exactly perfectly are purified. But not only that, O son of Prita, those who take shelter of me, though they be of lower birth, or women, Vaishyas, merchants, or Sudras, workers, that can attain the supreme destination. So Krishna, with his own mouth, says herein that this material world is a nitya. That's going to be described in the next verse. So those of lower birth can be purified. What to speak of high class births? Like, how much more this is so of the righteous brahmanas, the devotees, and the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world, they engage in loving service unto me. So in this verse, as I was saying, the Krishna says, bhakta rajasayastata anityam asukam lokam. So Krishna says this world is anitya. It is not mitya. It is not false, as the Mayavadis say. It is not illusion. It is anitya. What does anitya mean? Not eternal or?
Temporary.
So here Krishna is disproving Mayavad philosophy. Now the conclusion of the verse here. Therefore, knowing all these things, one should engage in pure devotional service. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evyashyasi yuktvaivam atmanam matparayana. The first thing one should do, not just work for Krishna, but first engage your mind in always thinking of me. Manmana bhava madbhakto, and become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Baladev Vidyabhusana says, the mind should be fixed on Krishna uninterruptedly, like honey flows from a bottle. Prabhupada explains in the purport, there's a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly stated that any person who is engaged in the worship of demigods is most unintelligent, and cannot achieve any time the supreme award of Krishna. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard, but he should still be considered superior to all other philosophers and yogis. One who is always engaged in Krishna consciousness should be understood to be a perfectly saintly person. His accidental non-devotional activities will diminish, and he will soon be situated without any doubt in complete perfection. The pure devotee has no actual chance to fall down, because the Supreme Godhead personally takes care of his pure devotees. Therefore, the intelligent person should take directly to the process of Krishna consciousness and happily live in the material world. He will eventually receive the supreme award of Krishna. So that last verse, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhiji Mam Namaskaru, this is exactly in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita, and this is the most confidential knowledge. The whole chapter is the most confidential knowledge, but this last verse is the conclusion and the most confidential part of the most confidential knowledge. Now, we shall move on to more exciting topics. Because Krishna says something amazing immediately. The last topic is the most confidential knowledge, and Krishna immediately says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, listen again, O mighty armed Arjuna, because you are my dear friend, for your benefit I shall speak to you further, giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained. So he's going to describe knowledge better than the most confidential knowledge. Amazing. But it's not exactly better. It's the same, but also wonderful. And it's just a further push. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Previously, beginning with the seventh chapter, the Lord has already explained his different energies and how they are acting. Now in this chapter, he explains his specific opulences to Arjuna. This chapter, entitled Vibhuti Yoga, the opulences of the Supreme, the Lord explains his opulences. In the previous chapter, he has clearly explained his different energies to establish devotion and firm conviction. Again in this chapter, he tells Arjuna about his manifestations and various opulences. And the reason why Krishna is going to do this is because he wants to increase the devotion that he's already established. Just like if we have a friend and we like him very much, and then we hear who he is. Oh, he's a quadrillionaire. He has 60 zillion billion dollars. He knows everyone. He is so powerful. He snaps his fingers and so many people come. Then we realize, oh, what a wonderful friend I have. It's natural. Because it is not that we see that the fact that he's opulent and he's powerful that enhances our appreciation of the loving part of our relationship with him. If our love is great, it is not that we immediately think, oh, how now can I exploit his opulences? Not like that, but understanding how great he is, and then we think, oh, and how fortunate I am that such a great person is engaged in such an intimate, loving relationship with me, and we appreciate it more. And we take up our part of relationship naturally, more seriously. So similarly, to increase Arjuna's devotion, he's going to describe his opulences. I think we'll save the questions for the end because we have to finish this chapter. Now, again, in this first section, Krishna is going to describe something very wonderful. In my summary sheet, the summary of the summary, I've called it, one who understands Krishna's unknowable position serves him. So this is contradictory by definition. If something is unknowable, how can one understand it? But it is possible when the unknowable person explains to you his opulences. And that's exactly what happens in this chapter. Yeah, use the one in the book. So Krishna describes, he's going to first, he glorifies the knowledge. I'm going to tell you something very, very wonderful, better than what I further explained. And now in the second verse, neither the host of demigods, nor the great sages, know my origin or opulences. For in every respect, I am the source of the demigods and sages. Because it's impossible for something that is created to know the source of that which has created him. So the creation can't understand where the creator came from. So even the demigods who are so powerful, and even the sages who are so knowing, they cannot understand Krishna completely, because they cannot understand his origin. But because the demigods and sages can't understand Krishna completely, that doesn't mean that no one can understand Krishna. Because if one hears from Krishna, then and only then can one understand. And therefore Krishna explains, he who knows me as the unborn, Ajam, as the beginningless, Anadim, as the Supreme Lord of all the worlds, Loka Maheshwaram, he, undiluted amongst men, is freed from all sins. So this is the fulfillment of Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tatvata. That one who knows me in truth, about my birth and activities in truth, he is liberated. Fourth chapter, ninth verse. He is liberated because understanding that although the unborn, the beginningless, has taken his birth. Why? How? How amazing that is. And one who understands these things, he is freed from sins, and the result of that is he will go to Krishna. So, Yomam Ajam. Some may think this isn't so hard to understand because Krishna is the Brahman who has taken his birth. But Krishna immediately says, Yomam Ajam. I am unborn. It is not that the Brahman has taken his birth. I have never taken my birth. I am unborn. But Lord Brahma, he is also known as Aja. Lord Brahma is also known as Aja because he has not taken a material birth. He's taken his birth from Govardhakshay Vishnu. But although Lord Brahma is Ajam, he is not Anadim. Because he has taken, although he hasn't taken his birth from anything material, he's not beginningless. And the demigods, they are Loka Maheshwaram, but they are also not Anadim. And the sages, they are unborn, Aja, because the soul is Ajam, it is unborn, and they are Anadim, they know that they are beginningless, they know that they are spirit, but they are not Loka Maheshwaram. So only Krishna, Loka Maheshwaram means what? Yes. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. So Krishna's already said this. So he, knowing Krishna is the only one who is like this, he undiluted amongst men, has freed from all sins. Now in the next section, or rather this goes on till 7. Now Krishna, Krishna is this, no one knows Krishna's source, but Krishna now explains how he is the source of all qualities. And it should be understood from this that all these qualities, the good, the bad, they are not sufficient to know him because he is the source of these qualities. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame, and infamy, all these various qualities of living entities are created by me alone. And because they are created by Krishna, they are not sufficient to of themselves to know him. Now, not only can one not know Krishna from the previous qualities, again, the same point, even the great sages and the demigods cannot know Krishna. Why? Because they're all born from Krishna. So Krishna says in 6, the 7 great sages, and before them, the 4 other great sages, and the Manus, progenitors of mankind, come from me, born from my mind. And all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. And what is the result of knowing Krishna? And one can't do it again by his own effort, but by hearing from Krishna, as Krishna said in the 7th chapter, as he said in the 9th chapter, and now here he's explaining it in the 10th chapter, by hearing from him, One can actually know his position. And what is the result of one who hears from Krishna non-enviously and faithfully? One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this, there is no doubt. One who knows this Vibhuti Yoga, this mystic opulence of mind, engages in my devotional service. Ananya. Undeviatingly, and without being deviated to worshipping anything else, serving Krishna. Now, to explain this further, Krishna in the next four verses is going to summarize the whole Bhagavad Gita. He's going to summarize in the first of these chatur slokas. Chatur slokas, the four verses that explain the entirety of the Bhagavad Gita in a nutshell. In the first verse, he's going to summarize his opulences. In the second verse, he's going to describe how the devotees who know his opulences, who are convinced about his opulences, how they relate to him. And in the next two verses, Krishna will describe how he relates with those pure devotees. So this is describes the whole Bhagavad Gita in one sense. Aham savasya prabhavo mataksavam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhavam samavita. I am the source of all the spiritual and material worlds. I am Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Buddha Bhava Samanvita. Bhava means love of Krishna. So the wise who know this truly, knowing who Krishna is, they can surrender to him. Because how can you surrender to someone who isn't powerful? As soon as we know Krishna's opulence and power, that gives us the faith to surrender to him and put ourselves in his hands. That knowing must be deep. And the result of that is bhav, or love of Krishna. Buddha bhava saman. Knowing this, then bhav can come. Buddha bhava samanvita. Then the second verse. Machita madgata prana bodhayantas paraspara katayantas chamam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. So the result of knowing Krishna in that way, that he is who he is that a devotee cannot maintain his life for a second without Krishna, because of the love that develops. Just like a fish cannot remain out of water, similarly the devotee cannot remain out of Krishna consciousness. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Then, so this is actually the highest position. This bhava bhakti, this is uttama bhakti. When one is spontaneously attracted to Krishna and cannot live a moment without Krishna consciousness. Then, what is Krishna's reciprocation with those devotees? We reciprocate with them. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buriyogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to. So they already have Ramanti. They are feeling great pleasure. So one can ask, by the devotional service, they're already feeling great Rama, or pleasure. So why do they need buddhi? Buddhi yogam, or intelligence. And Krishna explains, this buddhi yoga is the inspiration. It is me. It is my personal association. To those who are constantly devoted to serving with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me, that Krishna actually comes into their hearts. And in the next verse, to show them special mercy. Tesham evanukamparta mahamagyanajam tama nishyamatmi bhavasto gyanadipena vasvata. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So Krishna enters their hearts just like a bee enters a lotus flower. And that's what Baladev Vidyabhusan says. And he removes all the ignorance, and he himself expands in transcendental love within the heart of his devotees. So this is real intelligence when it's coming from Krishna in this way. And this is love of God. When Krishna himself takes up residence in the heart of the devotee, then the heart is dham. It is the purified heart by which Krishna enters and he manifests his pastimes, his loving exchanges, all his shaktis, his internal energy, like this. So this summarizes actually the Bhagavad Gita. By Krishna's mercy, when the devotee is so eager, when he loves Krishna so much, then Krishna reciprocates for that by entering his heart. Prabhupada explains in the purport, man can go on speculating for several millions of years, and if he is not devoted, if he is not a lover of the Supreme Truth, he will never understand Krishna or the Supreme Truth. Only by devotional service is the Supreme Truth Krishna pleased, and by his inconceivable energy, he can reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotee. The pure devotee always has Krishna within his heart, and with the presence of Krishna, who is like the sun, the darkness of ignorance is at once dissipated. This is the special mercy rendered to the pure devotee by Krishna. Due to the contamination of material association, through many, many millions of births, one's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism. But when one engages in devotional service and constantly chants Hare Krishna, the dust quickly clears and one is elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. The ultimate goal of Vishnu can be attained only by this chant and by devotional service, and not by mental speculation or argument. The pure devotee does not have to worry about the material necessities of life. He need not be anxious, because when he removes the darkness from his heart, everything is provided automatically by the Supreme Lord, who is pleased by the loving devotional service of the devotee. This is the essence of the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. By studying Bhagavad Gita, one can become a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord and engage himself in pure devotional service. As the Lord takes charge, one becomes completely free from all kinds of materialistic endeavor. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, these verses are the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. They remove the distress of the living entity and grant peace to him. Because once one understands who Krishna is, then one can surrender. And then when one surrenders to the shelter of the all-powerful, all-knowing, all-bliss-granting Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one can feel secure. And only when one is feeling secure, one can feel peaceful. It is said that a devotee lives in Krishna. And because he's living in Krishna consciousness, then what bad thing can happen to him? This is the great knowledge that the devotee has that grants him peace in even the most difficult circumstances. He sees everything as Krishna's mercy, and he knows his existence is completely devoted to his Lord, who is so merciful. Now, that was section B, after describing his unknowable position, Krishna described himself. Now in section C, Arjuna responds to Krishna by accepting what Krishna has said and asks to hear more. Because Arjuna, his appetite has become whetted by hearing of Krishna's glories. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages, such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyas, confirm this truth about you, and now you yourself are declaring it to me. O Krishna, I totally accept this truth, all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. So Krishna, Arjuna is called Krishna Keshava. K means Brahma, Sha means Shiva, and Va means sometimes Vishnu, or it sometimes means above. So all one who is above, even Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu. Only you can understand yourself. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your internal potency, O Supreme Person, Origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of gods, Lord of the universe. So here, Krishna has, Arjuna has called Krishna Purushottam, which means Supreme Person. But he himself, the Supreme Person, is the only one who knows himself completely. And then after describing him as the Supreme Person, he then uses many adjectives to glorify that Supreme Person by calling him the origin of all, the creator, the lord of everything, the controller, the lord of the demigods, the supreme controller, and the lord of the universe, the protector. So in this way, Arjuna is glorifying Krishna and taking shelter of him. Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds. So Krishna, Arjuna is asking Krishna to tell him of his opulences. And Krishna has already explained the Hamsavasya Prabhavo, how he is everything. But Arjuna is saying that it's difficult to understand you, so let me hear more of your opulences. Why? So I can think of you. Because Krishna has said, we know that he says in chapter 6, Madgitena Antarapanam, and in the end of, what is the last verse in the ninth chapter? So, man mana bhava madbhakto. You become my devotee and always think about me. So Krishna described in this chapter his opulences right here so that Arjuna can always think about him. O Krishna, O Supreme Mystic, how shall I constantly think of you and how shall I know you? In what various forms are you to be remembered, O Supreme Personality of Godhead? So Krishna has already said that one who knows his opulences becomes united with him. In yoga, he said that in the end of the first section in this chapter, in 10.7, Arjuna wants to know about Krishna, from Krishna, about all his opulences, because if one doesn't hear about Krishna from Krishna, Krishna is unknowable. So he's asking, well, Krishna asks Arjuna, well, what do you want to hear? You want me to tell you how I can meditate, how you can tell me how you can meditate on me or remember me? So Krishna, Arjuna, and Krishna answers in text 18 that he wants to hear more and more about Krishna and how he can be meditated upon. O Janardhan, again, please describe in detail the mystic power of your opulences. I'm never satiated in hearing about you, for the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words. So Vishwanath Chakravarti has described how this sounds so funny. For the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words. So Vishwanath points out, with your ears you are tasting? And Arjuna's reply is, my ears have become like a tongue, the agent of tasting the nectar of your words. So now Krishna begins his description of his opulences, and that's the final section actually in this chapter 9. Section D, and that goes to the end of the chapter. And he begins by saying, Sri Bhagavan Vacha Hunta. Hunta means dear one. Like sometimes a lover will address his beloved as honey. So Hunta means like that, honey. So Krishna was so pleased by Arjuna's inquiry to explain about his opulence. He says, Hunta, oh honey, I will now tell you. Yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those who are prominent, O Arjuna, for my opulence is limited. I am the super soul. First, he describes his unlimited. Did I say limited? Limitless. Acha. Actually, of course, I was just saying that to see if you were listening. Thank you for listening very carefully. Now, first, Krishna will describe his spiritual energy. I am the super soul, O Arjuna, seated in the hearts of all living entities. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all beings. That beings means of all living beings, all sentient beings. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Of lights, I am the radiant sun. Of the Maruts, I am Maruchi. And among the stars, I am the moon. Of the Vedas, I am the Samaveda. Of the demigods, I am Indra, the king of heaven. Of the senses, I am the mind. And in living beings, I am the living force. So Krishna, in all these, is explaining groups and how is the, and he is the most prominent essence of these groups, which are easily understood or seen within this material world. And Krishna is the essence or most opulent of the members of these groups. Of the Rudras, of all the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva. Of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the Lord of Wealth, Kuvera. Of the Vasus, I am Fire, Agni. And of mountains, I am Meru. Of priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief, Brihaspati. Of generals, I am Kartikeya. And of bodies of water, I am the ocean. The ocean, due to its greatness, it neither increases nor decreases. So much water leaves the ocean in the form of evaporation and it forms clouds. And so much water enters the ocean in the form of rains and rivers. But yet the ocean always remains the same because of its greatness. And Krishna in the second chapter has told Arjuna to be like the ocean, whose when the desires run into the mind, like rivers run into the ocean isn't agitated. So similarly, we should be the same. Of the great sages, I am Bhrigu. Of vibrations, I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy name, Japa, and of immovable things, I am the Himalayas. Of all trees, I am the Asvat, which is translated the banyan tree. And of the sages, amongst the demigods, I am Narada. Nara means God, and Da means giver of. So Narada is called Narada because he gives God to everyone. Of the Gandhavas, I am Chitrarat. And among perfected beings, I am the sage Kapila. Of horses, know me to be Uchai Srav, produced during the churning of the ocean for nectar. Of lordly elephants, I am Airavat. And amongst men, I am the monarch. Of weapons, I am the thunderbolt. Among cows, I am the Surabhi. Of causes for procreation, I am Kandarbha, the god of love. And of serpents, I am Vasuki. Of the many-hooded Nagas, I am Ananta. And amongst the aquatics, I am the demigods, Varuna. Of departed ancestors, I am Aryam. And amongst dispensers of law, I am Yama, the lord of death. Amongst the daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlad. Amongst subduers, I am time. Why? Because time controls everything. Amongst beasts, I am the lion. And amongst birds, I am Garuda. Of purifiers, I am the wind, and of the wielders of weapons, I am Ram. Of fish, I am the shark, and of flowing rivers, I am the Ganges. Of all creations, of all things that are created, I am the beginning and the end and also the middle. So in text 20, Krishna also said, I am the beginning, the living, the end, but of all beings, all sentient beings. But here, Krishna is saying he's the beginning and middle of the end of everything non-sentient, those things that are created. Of all sciences, I am the spiritual science of the self, and among logicians, I am the conclusive truth. So in nyaya, or logic, there are different types of ways to get the truth. They're called vitendra, vada, and jalpa. So Krishna says, I am Vada. I am the natural conclusion. The difference is that Vitendra is when someone is arguing and just concerned with defeating the other party. These things happen. He's not concerned with what's actually the truth or finding the truth, just defeating the other party. That's vitenda. And then jalpa means you want to prove that you are correct and the other is wrong, regardless of who is actually correct. And vada, which Krishna says he is, means that you want to find out what the actual truth is, and using argument and discussion to do that. So Krishna says, amongst dealings of logic, I am vada, when one wants to find out the actual truth and uses discussion to do so. Of letters, I am the letter A. And in Sanskrit, no word can be pronounced without without the vowel A. Similarly, that nothing can exist without Krishna. Among compound words, I am the dual compound. This, according to Jiva Goswami, is called, in his Harinamrita Vyakaran, is called the Ramakrishna Samash, the compound. And it's when both parts are important in different type of other compounds. One part is important and the second part isn't, or the second part isn't important and the first part is, or vice versa, or neither are important. And in this one, in the Ramakrishna compound, this one that Krishna is mentioning, that both are important, and that is Krishna. I am also inexhaustible time, and of creators, I am Brahma. I am all-devouring death, and I am the generating principle of all things yet to be. Amongst women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. This isn't actually amongst women. These are the glorious qualities. This actually means of all feminine qualities, because, and it actually has nothing to do with women particularly, but in Sanskrit, qualities, there are many qualities that are feminine, considered feminine. And amongst all those qualities, these seven are considered representing Krishna. Prabhupada explains that the seven opulences listed, fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience, are considered feminine. If a person possesses all of them or some of them, he becomes glorious. Of the hymns in the Samaveda, I am the Brihat Sam. Krishna has already said, amongst the Vedas, I am Samaveda. And now, amongst the Samaveda, the hymns, I am the Brihat Sam, which is very sweet. And Prabhupada explains that. It sounds very sweet. And of poetry, I am the Gayatri. Of months, I am Margashirsh, November, December, which is harvest time. And of seasons, I am the flower-bearing spring. I am also the gambling of cheats. And I am the splendor. I am that thing that when we look at something splendid, we see it. I am the splendid, that which is splendid in that splendorous thing. I am victory. I am adventure. I am the strength of the strong. Of the descendants of Vrishni, I am Vasudev. And Arjuna is thinking all this time, I wonder who he is amongst the Pandavas. He's probably Yudhisthira, what Krishna says. And of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. Of the sages, I am Vyas. And amongst great thinkers, I am Ushan. Amongst all means of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. And of those who seek victory, I am morality. Of secret things, I am silence. And of the wise, I am the wisdom. Now Krishna begins to sum up. Furthermore, O Arjuna, I am the generating seed of all existence. There is no being, either moving or non-moving, that can exist without me. So Krishna is explaining how one can actually think about him and meditate on him and see him everywhere. Because nothing, no one, moving, non-moving, can exist without Krishna. So anytime we see anything whatsoever, we can think, this person, this tree, this building, this universe is simply dependent on Krishna and cannot exist without him. O mighty conqueror of enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimad orjitam eva va tad tad eva vagatstatvam mama tejo anksa sambhava. That Everything that is beautiful, Srimad, is beautiful. Orjita means strength or glories. Vibhutimat means opulences. So this text sums up all the opulences previously mentioned. That know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. Everything opulent and beautiful and glorious and strong that exists should be seen as just a part of Krishna's splendor. And Krishna sums it up, an extra point, which is more or less just the same as the previous point. But what need is there, O Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, Ekam Sena, with just one part of my energy, I pervade and support this entire universe. So whatever is seen, not only the extraordinary things that have been mentioned by Krishna, but everything that is seen is supported by Krishna's potency. Prabhupada explains in the purport. If, however, one thoroughly studies the different descriptions of the opulences and expansions of Krishna's energy, then one can understand without any doubt the position of Lord Sri Krishna and can fix his mind in the worship of Krishna without deviation. The Lord is all-pervading by the expansion of his partial representation, the Supersoul, who enters into everything that is. Pure devotees, therefore, concentrate their minds in Krishna consciousness in full devotional service. Therefore, they are always situated in the transcendental position. Devotional service and worship of Krishna are very clearly indicated in this chapter in verses 8 through 11. That is the way of pure devotional service. Questions? Thank you for patiently waiting for the whole chapter to end. Chris?
Why is Pushana, who's Shukracharya, considered a great thinker?
Because he thinks very greatly. He's very clever, Prabhupada explains that. Because his thinking is, even though he's on the wrong side, he thinks very great. He's expert in thinking clearly. He's a great politician, Brahmin advisor. He brought Bali Maharaj's, all his warriors, he brought them back to life. And Bali Maharaj himself. That is very powerful, that is great.
Another question. Have you ever heard the Brihat Sarang?
No.
Is it possible to hear it?
I'm sure it's possible to hear it. One way is you can go to the heavenly planets.
No, I mean,
put together
on a set. Or hear the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra play it, possibly. I don't know. Probably somewhere, yeah.
Verses 12-13.
12-13?
Yeah, these two verses, the Ram, 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 Ram.
Yes.
So it seems that we don't have kind of came to a satisfactory, say, special point. And it seems like a special point in Bhagavad Gita. It's like the first time that Arjuna fully accepts and actually says, accepts Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Supreme, the Master of. So it's my question is why is the Gita spoken further? But maybe we can discuss the importance of this statement.
Well, the idea is there's so much spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna ultimately could have just said, "Sarvanamam Prityaja, my dear Arjuna, I have driven your chariot in the middle of the armies. Sarvanamam Prityaja, you have given me so many arguments, give them all up and just fight." So the Bhagavad Gita, instead of being spoken in 700 verses, could have been spoken in one verse, more or less. So why did Krishna do this? So one answer is that he has to explain all these things to get those who are practicing karma, jnana, and yoga to understand his position so that they do have the faith to Sarvadamam Prityaja Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja, to give up all their practices and to surrender to him, which is actually his desire. So all these different things are meant to draw people in. to get more and more people to surrender to Krishna for their welfare. Yeah, that's what Vishwanath Chakraborty Thakur described. And it's accidental due to some previous conditioning. Prabhupada has explained that many times. Because he hasn't given up his determination to serve Krishna, and because he's lamenting, and he's thinking, even if I have to go to hell because of this, not that I'm thinking, this doesn't mean that, oh, I've committed a great offense, but still I want to be considered the greatest of the devotees, because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, apichet sudarasharo, therefore you must consider me still a great devotee, even though I've done abominable things due to my previous conditioning, and you all must consider me like that. No, it's just the opposite. He says, no, I'm a black spot on the name of being a devotee, therefore I should be considered the lowest devotee, and if you allow me to do any kind of service, I'm very fortunate, and I'll certainly go to hell for this, but I'll never give up serving Krishna. That attitude is purifying. The other attitude of, yes, Krishna says, apichet sudarasharo, that I should be considered a sadhu, sadhya, and even he says, sadhya even, it's an offense to consider me anything else other than a sadhu, even though I've done this horrible thing. You're offensive, Prabhu. See, that is not really the proper attitude, is it? That's not what Krishna describes at all. That is bogus attitude. And that attitude is straight Maya, and one won't be purified by that.